delivering truly comprehensive financial services, but at a level that's actually high enough to increase the number of referrals that you receive from your well-served clients? Well, it's not easy, but together we're going to show you how. This is the Advisor Pack Monthly session for those members of the Advisor Pack Monthly program. Each month, we deal with your questions submitted as you're trying to and struggling to implement and get into place truly comprehensive financial services. So as you notice, there, if you examine your GoToWebinar panel, there is a place for you to submit your questions as we go along here today. But there were, as always, each month, questions submitted in advance. And I go through a process each month trying to establish, of the questions submitted, which ones would be the best, most useful to the group. So this month, I've selected three questions that I think are helpful to everyone, and I will display them here just real briefly so that you can see what we're going to be dealing with today. Now, we have 45 minutes scheduled together on the clock, but I will commit to staying on this session until we complete all the content. And if you submit questions as we go along here, if we need to go over to address your questions, we'll do that. There's quite a bit of content, but even though we just have three questions, so I will warn you in advance that we may go a little bit over today. We'll just see how it goes. So let's deal with the first question here. How do I describe truly comprehensive financial services to my potential ideal clients? This is a great question, and not that any question is a bad question. It's just that I so frequently encounter advisors who cannot articulate the value that they provide in a coherent, conversational, concise, and compelling manner. So we'll go through that today. The basis for this, as you might imagine, is Advisor Pact. So I'm going to use the Advisor Pact concept as the foundation for this conversation as you describe the value that you provide to your clients to others. So you're at a backyard barbecue, or you're at a cocktail party, you're at a board meeting for some charitable function that you're volunteering towards, and somebody just asks you politely, so what do you do for a living? This is the scenario that we're talking about, where you are able to articulate what it is that you do in a very coherent and compelling way. So, Advisor Pact, as you probably know by now, the word itself, PACT, is an acronym, and it stands for Protection, Attention, Coordination, and Transparency. And so those are the four key concepts. That's the pact that you're making with your best clients. So let me take that acronym and let's deconstruct it. You don't have to have a conversation in any particular order. So you don't have to start off by saying, you know, I provide protection to my clients. Although if that's natural for you, you certainly can do that. My point is that you can take these four concepts and present them in any order that makes logical sense in the context of the conversation that you're having. I tend to like to go in a certain order, and I'll walk through that with you right now. So somebody asked me, so Mark, what do you do for a living? I say very simply, it's a very, very simple description. I say that I coordinate the personal financial affairs for a small community of families. And so that is basic. That is what I say that I do. I coordinate the personal financial affairs for a small community of ideal clients or families. And so that's the baseline. Now, some people are going to listen to that. First of all, just notice that is not the typical response that you get from a financial advisor. Financial advisors say all kinds of things, and I receive recordings from you on your conversations with potential ideal clients, and I can tell you that what you say about what you do has got to be very compelling, and it's at least got to be coherent. So in the context of just a casual conversation, this is not a sales pitch, keep in mind. You're just trying to convey to another human being what it is that you do. So if they cross that line and say, and want to know more, which that's a vague enough description of what you do, that if you're having a normal conversation, it's very common that someone says, so how do you do that? Or exactly what do you mean? You know, they're, you know, just in a pleasant conversation, trying to explore a little bit more about what you do. That's when you get into advisor pact. So what I would say in the order that I tend to like to go through this is to say that I provide complete and total oversight over the personal financial affairs of a family, which means coordinating all the financial people and the financial recommendations in your life under an overarching strategy so that everything is well aligned with your intentions and your objectives. And so it also means paying close attention to your financial affairs so that if things drift even slightly off course, I'm going to notice it right away. And we're going to quickly make recommendations to get your affairs back on track to the financial objectives that you've set for yourself. And full transparency is key. So especially in understanding what your financial products and services are costing you, you know, it's my role with my clients to ensure that what people are charging you is crystal clear and that the motives of all the financial people in your life are fully disclosed and well understood. And finally, it's my job to protect your financial assets and your financial strategy. It's my role to identify every potential conflict of interest among the people that you're dealing with and to continually increase the safety of your overarching plan. So it's making this pact to work on behalf of your clients in these four areas, which is, allows you to make the promises that I just described. So you have to kind of make two commitments to be aligned with what we're doing here in the Advisor Pact Monthly program. First of all, once you're committed to moving towards delivering truly comprehensive financial services, that's a key component. And we'll break that down here in just a second. But, you know, to be a member of the Advisor Pact Monthly, you don't have to be already delivering truly comprehensive financial services, but the commitment needs to be there that what you're moving towards in your business model is delivering truly comprehensive financial services. And to make this advisor pact with all your ideal clients. Then once you've done both of those things, then you're in full alignment with what we're teaching and what we're talking about here in the Advisor Pact Monthly program. So the only task after you've made those two commitments then is to build your deliverables team of subject matter experts and establish your deliverables checkpoints and then have a candid conversation with each of your ideal clients making this advisor pact. So here's what I propose. I want you to, my call to action to you is to have to create an exercise for yourself. It doesn't matter to me if you do this with your spouse or maybe one of your business colleagues, perhaps your administrative assistant, whatever it is. I recommend that you actually practice this. And it goes like this. The what you're practicing is you have your practice partner ask you, so what do you do for a living? And then I want you to respond and practice saying, I coordinate all the personal financial affairs for a small community of clients. And then they say, really? So how do you do that? Or exactly what do you do? To which you then respond, my primary role is oversight. And then use each of the four words in Advisor Pact to describe your role. You can go in any order, but talk about protection, which is in essence peer review, the fact that you provide oversight and review all the recommendations that somebody makes in the financial life of a client, that you pay attention, that the idea of paying attention is this essential aspect of what we do that allows in our business model to notice when things have drifted off course and to notice them quickly and to then make recommendations for a course correction. So You know, these are all things that are not occurring in a client's financial life currently. Nobody's ever told them my job is to protect your financial assets and protect your financial strategy from all the forces in the world that are working against them and the things in the world that are out of your control, like the financial markets. And as far as paying attention, when has a client ever had someone tell them that I'm going to pay close attention to your personal financial affairs so that if anything drifts off course, even one degree, we're going to notice it quickly and make a recommendation for a course correction. The idea of coordination means that there is a strategy in place. So coordinating what? Well, we're going to make sure that there's an overarching strategy in place, which most clients don't have. And we're going to coordinate both the people in a client's life, and the client says, what people? And you say, well, most clients have a tax person, maybe an estate planning lawyer, insurance agents, things like that. So there are financial people in a client's life. We're going to coordinate them around an overarching strategy. And whenever they make recommendations, our team is going to review them before you as a client see the recommendation to make sure that every recommendation is well aligned with the overarching strategy. And then finally, transparency. You know, there are potential conflicts of interest all over the place. For example, even though they're highly professional and oftentimes the recommendations are correct, take an insurance agent, for example. The fact that they have a commission on the line and that they could make one recommendation versus another recommendation and they have different potential compensations attached, that creates a potential for conflict of interest. It doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't mean that the professional is acting in any wrongful way. It just simply means it calls it what it is. My job is to identify the potential for conflict and to review every recommendation before you see it to make sure that we understand what the conflicts are and that that's been looked into. And that at the end of the day, every recommendation that you see, Mr. or Mrs. Client, has been reviewed by a dispassionate third party. So I think it might help you to describe the value under this model, this advisor-packed model, if I give you a little bit of background as to how it was created. So I noticed, and this is going back years, I started thinking about this in 1999. I had been in the business for 12 years at that time. And I noticed that the way most retail financial advisors structure their business is in a way that the best clients find truly unremarkable. And it is true to this day. I mean, if you'd have told me back in 1999 that we would be sitting here in 2014 and having a conversation about how unremarkable and uncompelling and how, what's the word? Unaligned? Disaligned? How disaligned the business model for the average financial advisor is with what the client actually wants and what the expectations are in the minds of the best clients, I would have not believed you. You know, this is 15 years ago and 16 years ago. So as we were thinking about this, we looked at financial advisors. What they were offering to clients was not anything compelling and is still the case today. Just to make the point, we recently spoke with a very successful, very busy CEO, a founder and owner of a very successful corporation. And she was telling us that she approached a group of her CEO buddies, a group that gets together, other CEOs, and they, you know, they're just peers and they advise each other and they, you know, get together on just to enjoy each other socially and so forth. But it's a CEO group that she meets with regularly. And she went to that group and asked for a referral to a comprehensive financial advisor who could help her coordinate all her personal financial affairs. And she was actually looking for a professional to help her create a plan and to ensure that she's on track to all her various personal financial objectives. And a person that could actually coordinate all the financial affairs because she does have like an accountant and some money managers and, you know, insurance people and lawyers and so forth. She's already got these people in her life. She's looking for someone to coordinate all of her financial affairs and to hire someone who could pay, who will pay close attention to know when action is needed to be taken in any of these areas of finance, you know, tax, estate planning, maybe to notice when the need to increase safety is present and to make recommendations. In other words, not simply to advise on one or two elements of finance like money management, investments and management and so forth. She found a lot of that. So as she started interviewing, she found a lot of people that did one or maybe possibly two aspects of personal financial affairs, but she struggled with finding someone to coordinate everything. So anyway, back to her CEO group, she was struggling to find someone. She went to her CEO friends and said, you know, can you give me a recommendation? And none of them, and they were 10 other CEOs, so there's 11 in the group. None of the 10 other CEOs were willing to refer their own current financial advisor. And most of them asked her to let them know if she found anyone competent and worthy of trust to do what she was describing. So none of them were willing to refer their own advisor. And that's the frustrating experience that literally millions of multimillionaires all over the world are encountering when they're seeking truly comprehensive financial services. That's the whole point of this program. The clients believe that they are not able to find a truly comprehensive financial advisor anywhere at any price. And eventually they stop looking, like this CEO woman has done. And this creates an incredible opportunity for advisors like you who are willing to step up their game and deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So let me just describe real quick why we didn't believe and don't believe that the current business model used by the vast majority of financial advisors works very well, and why your potential ideal clients are actively looking for a better alternative. First of all, most financial advisors, as we just mentioned, are not truly comprehensive. They're good at one or maybe two areas of personal finance, but not the others, and are not willing to take on the comprehensive role. Many financial advisors are, I'm going to call it asset focused. So either money management or assets under management, or in some cases, advisors are, you know, representing certain financial products, or maybe they're just focused on the financial assets rather than being focused on the client. I mean, even the term wealth management, without to put too fine a point on it, is an advisor that's focused on the wealth, not the client. So it's an asset focused business for most financial advisors. And clients pick up on this, and many clients don't like that. So rather than focusing on the client, the advisor's intentions, the client and the client's intentions and their overall financial strategy, most advisors are focused on the assets. And it overlooks or ignores potential conflicts of interest that are facing the client. I'm not talking necessarily about the advisor themselves, although if the advisor is being compensated on products, that's not clearly, well, I tell you, the data is very clear on this. Regardless of handing out prospectuses and whatever the advisor is telling clients, it's not getting through. So the idea that a client is, that it's fully disclosed how advisors are compensated, or put another way, do clients really know what they're paying for their investments? The data is clear. They do not. And so, but I'm also talking about potential conflicts of interest of other financial people in a client's life. And so, you know, you have an estate planning attorney that tells your client that they need to spend $30,000 to create an estate plan, very complex with lots of trusts and lots of, you know, limited partnerships and all this complicated structure. I'm not going to comment on whether or not it's a good idea for this particular client to do that. I'm just saying, who's asking the question in the client's life whether that's necessary or not? That's what I'm talking about, that most advisors are overlooking or ignoring the potential conflicts of interest being faced by clients and poorly coordinates what's already in place. So how many times does an average financial advisor out there pick up the phone, and how frequently do they talk to the client's tax expert, the client's attorney, the client's insurance agents, the client's other money managers? You know, this is the kind of coordination that's not happening. And clients actually distrust what our industry cranks out regularly. And our industry promotes the idea of an advisor who's a one-man band, kind of a jack of all trades and master of none. Clients distrust a financial planner that does not coordinate with others on the team. It's just the notion, you can say all you want in our industry about how smart it is to train a certified financial planner to be, you know, the jack of all trades and the single individual kind of master coordinating everything. But clients notice and distrust and are skeptical whether a single person has enough experience and skill to coordinate everything. And clients actually like the idea of having a diversified team of subject matter experts who have spent their whole professional careers diving into and becoming skilled at a narrow field of finance, and then getting a team like that put together where everybody's focusing on their specialty, but yet everybody's coordinating on the team and looking at what everyone else is doing. So, you know, so clients distrust this one-man band approach that our industry seems to love. And you just client in our industry, advisors end up with all these non-ideal clients. So, you know, I work with advisors all day long, and it's just, you know, sad how many non-ideal clients the average advisor ends up acquiring because, you know, it's financial survival. We're not trained in this industry to turn away clients. So we end up, after a number of years in the business, with a bunch of non-ideal clients. And most advisors don't have frequent and ongoing communication with all the financial people in a client's life because they have all these non-ideal clients where you're not being compensated to do all that level of effort for a smaller client. And just the whole idea, without getting into a tremendous amount of detail, but the typical model of a financial advisor, it's working all these hours and it steals your ideal life. You've got this vision of why you got in the business and the difference that you want to make and what your life's going to look like. And then you blink and you wake up a number of years down the road and you're not living your ideal life. You're just investing a lot of hours. That's not every advisor, but that is a lot of advisors. So, and then talking about the meeting experience itself, we don't do a very good job in our industry of encouraging advisors to really work on improving the client meeting experience itself. So for clients, when we have data on this, when you talk to clients about their actual meetings with their financial advisors, here's what they say. It's a very remarkable and often annoying experience for a lot of clients. And clients tend to describe these meetings with their financial advisor as boring, unnecessarily technical. Sometimes clients describe they get a sense that there's an ulterior motive to the meeting, maybe a sales objective. The meetings aren't interesting. They're not action oriented. They don't talk about the things that the client matters most to the client. It's not an enjoyable experience. And many advisors require both spouses to attend these client meetings, and both spouses are not necessary. You can only speculate why the advisor wants both there, but because the meeting is itself not extraordinary, one of the two spouses prefers not to attend, and then that creates a little anxiety because the advisor is trying to get both spouses to attend. One of the spouses doesn't enjoy this and prefers not to attend, and that creates a little bit of stress. There's very little preparation for most client meetings. Most advisors don't perform any kind of a dress rehearsal or a preparation prior to the client meeting, even however large the client is. All these things are things that I identified, things that clients don't like, and we decided that business model is not working. And so just so you know, I was that advisor. Everything that I just described, that's what I was back in 1999. So here's what I invented. This is my business model. This whole advisor pact concept involves two primary principles. One is that you're going to deliver truly comprehensive financial services and that you're going to make an advisor pact to deliver it. So truly comprehensive financial services, your commitment to deliver that, that's focused internally on having a team and a process to ensure that a client's financial house is in perfect order and stays that way forever. It's a promise internally that you're going to oversee all aspects of a client's personal financial affairs, financial planning, tax planning, money management, estate planning, and insurance risk planning. And that means that you're going to commit to building an oversight team of subject matter experts that has three objectives. You're going to, first of all, ensure that this client is on track with all their financial goals and promptly establish a course correction to get things back on track when things drift off course. Secondly, you're going to commit to looking ahead and to be so proactive that there are never any financial surprises in a client's life. And that means focusing and taking charge of all the areas of a client's life which are within their control. You know, not obsessing on things outside of your control, but really taking charge of things that are within their control. And then the third objective of all of this is, or delivering truly comprehensive financial services, is to help a client make better choices about their money in all areas of finance so that every client can say that they are indeed making smart choices about their money. So that's the truly comprehensive financial services commitment. But on the advisor pact side, making an advisor pact with each and every client, that's different. So advisor pact, on the other hand, is not internally focused with your team. It's a deeply personal commitment directly with the client, not the team. So it's a commitment to each client that you're going to protect them. You're going to pay close attention. You're going to coordinate everything and everyone and every recommendation. And you're going to enforce transparency. And you're going to point out whenever there's conflicts of interest. So that's my challenge to you. I'd like for you to have an exercise with your spouse, your administrative assistant, one of your business colleagues. I want them to ask you, so what do you do? I want you to respond in this manner. And then when they say, really, how do you do that? Then I want you to go through PACT. And I want you to use those four words in any order, but to have a sentence describing what's your commitment to your clients. And in that way, you'll be describing what you do and you'll be articulating your value in a way that you're describing things that no client has currently in place. So you eliminate the risk of a potential client saying, oh, I've got someone in my life already doing all that stuff. Well, these are the four things that this is what our data proves and has proved since 2002, that these are the four things that are missing in a potential client's life. Next question. I'm in the process of acquiring subject matter experts in each of the areas of personal finance, as you suggest. Acquiring a financial planning subject matter expert, a tax planning subject matter expert, a money management subject matter expert, an estate planning subject matter expert, and an insurance subject matter expert. I've heard you state that my team of subject matter experts is the quote-unquote oversight team, which oversees the implementation team. Could you please explain the difference between the oversight team, my team, and the implementation team? So what's the difference between the two? Sure. All right. So Let's jump right in. So oversight is one of the primary elements that's actually missing in most of your potential ideal clients' lives. And it's creating an oversight team, which creates this business opportunity for you. And so by providing oversight over every aspect of a client's financial affairs, you're actually providing a service that other financial advisors, your competitors, are not even thinking about, but which clients will ultimately value the most. So you're actually filling a gap in the marketplace, and by doing this, you're radically differentiating yourself by providing an oversight team. Now, I will say that this is not a distinction that potential ideal clients clearly grasp at first, but they will nevertheless help you. In other words, creating an oversight team will help you create a financial services monopoly in your community. So how's that work? All right. So why is this so important? Well, we've studied this. And when you have some ideal clients, after a while, when you've acquired a few ideal clients, it's them, it's that group, it's your existing ideal clients who are very well served by you and your oversight team. It's them that begins describing you to other people, to other potential ideal clients. And it's your oversight role that's the most common thing that they describe, and they'll give examples. So your well-served clients will describe you typically in your role, your oversight role. So oversight is something that non-ideal clients don't particularly value, probably because they mistakenly think that all financial advisors provide oversight, which is not true. But it's this very element of service which a well-served client often picks up on first and ultimately values the most, and is the way that they will describe you to others. So if you properly provide oversight, then your well-served clients will take it from there for you. And they'll provide extraordinary examples of situations where your oversight really mattered in their life. So if you execute this properly, this oversight's going to provide, that you will provide, is often going to be the most valuable service that you have, and at least from your client's perspective. So exactly what do I mean when I say oversight? Well, it's a very simple principle. The key principle is this, that a professional, a tax accountant, an estate planning lawyer, a money manager, an insurance professional, cannot dispassionately review their own work. It's just, that's the key principle. You can't review yourself. A team which is set up and designed so that each team member reviews their own work, well, that team has created a structural potential for conflict of interest. You have people reviewing their own work and nobody overseeing them, then you've got a structural, you've designed into your business model a potential for conflict of interest. So it's built in. Unfortunately. So we want to avoid this. We take the principle that a person cannot review their own work without conflict. And so we're going to design a team where that's not built in. We're going to have an oversight team. So I want to introduce you're aware of the term subject matter expert, SME, but I want to talk about I want to introduce a term SMEO. So it's a subject matter experts whose job is oversight. Okay. That would be your subject matter expert leaders. So having people on your team whose sole function is oversight. Those are the leaders. Those are the people on your team. They're the subject matter expert leaders versus SMEIs. So subject matter expert implementers. These are the people that actually do the taxes, create the wills and trusts, actually manage the accounts and money and so forth, actually implement the insurance recommendations and oversee them over time. So the role of these two are different, okay? And a subject matter expert's primary role on your team is oversight, not implementation. So let's just kind of walk through it. The traditional model in the financial services industry is this one. So this is what clients have in their mind before they meet you. They think this is the only model that's available. The client handles their own oversight. They might have a tax person, they have money manager, but they're dealing with all these individuals directly, and they're in a position of having to coordinate everything. So from a time standpoint, you know, this is, and some of them do it better than others. Some clients do this very well. Some clients hate it. Many clients, and these are our targets, they're just a little bit resentful that they have to be the one to do this. They're busy people, you know, busy business people. They've got a lot going on in their life. They've got a spouse. They've got a family. They've got things in their life they'd rather be doing other than sitting down and coordinating their taxes and their money management and their estate planning and their insurance decisions and all of that. So it's a time issue. It's something that they're thinking, why on earth can't I find somebody to delegate this to? And that's the model that we're talking about. So comprehensive financial services model, truly comprehensive financial services model, the way that we talk about it in Advisor Pact is now you insert a trusted advisor. You have you as an advisor who will make it your job to understand what the client's trying to accomplish. You're going to understand their values, their goals, what their intentions are. You're going to really be at a position of committing to understanding what the client's trying to accomplish so that you can then swivel your chair around and be the point of contact for the rest of the team, helping to make sure that they understand and can provide oversight in each of the areas of personal finance so that they can oversee the implementation of each of these areas. Okay, so now introduce the implementation team. This is your oversight team. Your team is the oversight team making sure everything gets done, and they're going to review the work in each of these areas of personal finance. So you've got your tax subject matter expert, your SMEO, your oversight person, and then there's the implementation team. So the client has, let's say, a tax person. This is the person who actually creates the tax return, implements the tax return, and your tax oversight person oversees that individual or team. And then you've got your money management oversight person. This is the individual that reviews and oversees how the money management is actually doing, establishes the asset allocation, makes sure that the money managers who are actually implementing the money management, that it's working. And it's a sound strategy that you're going to continue with. It's your money manager oversight subject matter expert that's going to make the decision of who to hire to actually manage the money, the implementation team. So that's the oversight role. Estate planning, you know, as we gave the example a minute ago, you have the estate planning implementation lawyer who's telling the client, you know, you need to spend $30,000 on a complicated set of wills and trusts and so forth. And it's our estate planning oversight person on our team who reviews that recommendation, make sure it's well aligned with the overarching strategy, and to make sure that it is appropriate for this client, that it's at least being reviewed whether this recommendation is correct or not. And then the same goes for insurance. So you've got your oversight person who's reviewing the recommendations of the implementation people and making sure everything's well aligned. And of course, what does not exist in most of your potential ideal clients' lives is an overarching strategy, pulling together everything into a plan that will accomplish what the client's trying to achieve. And that requires a financial planner. So on the implementation team, if the client had a financial planner, that person's got to go. We can't have two financial planners. We've got one person who's coordinating everything. So the client's financial planner, if they have one, and most don't, or if they do, it was something they did some time ago and they don't have ongoing, you know, relationship with them, but some might. This is the one piece in understanding this oversight. That person, you know, that is what the client is letting go. Why? Because if they were capable of coordinating and overseeing all the people in the client's financial life, they would have already done it by now. Same goes for any of these implementation people. We hear from time to time a tax expert telling a client, well, wait a minute, why are you hiring this trusted advisor? And the client explains oversight, having an overarching strategy, in essence, creating a team to make sure that the overall financial house is in order and to coordinate all the people and the recommendations on the team, to which the accountant says, well, we can do that. You know, we certainly have the team that could do that. And the best response is, well, if you could have done it, why haven't you? So the fact that you haven't done it, it says a lot. It's that you're either unable or unwilling, or you don't get it, or something has happened that I'm not a client that's worthy of delivering that service. So we haven't done it to this point. So that's why I've hired this trusted advisor and the oversight team to oversee everything. That's the concept. Now let's fly through the difference between implementation and oversight in each of these subject matter experts' situations. So let's talk about the tax planning implementation. What is implementation in the area of tax? Well, it's the individual that prepares the tax returns. I kind of grade this one out. It's the tax, the annual tax projection. And for the upcoming tax deadline, the existing implementation person sometimes does this. My experience is usually not, but they could, and they may be doing it for some clients. But typically, that is implementation, but it's typically not currently happening. And then giving advice prior to taxable events. So a client's going to sell an appreciated asset. It's just the whole notion that there is coordination, and the implementation person actually should be the one who's explaining to everybody else on the team what the tax consequences would be of selling a certain asset and so forth. What are the tax implications? That is implementation. I grade it out because that's not always happening in a client's life, but it is implementation. And so the point is that the tax planning implementation person is compensated for implementation duties only. So, you know, the client's paying for this. This is not typically part of your fee. That's the implementation of your plan. So what's the tax oversight person do? Well, they provide oversight regarding tax returns. They look at the accuracy and they look to see if there were any missed opportunities to reduce taxes and so forth. They're looking for, they're basically looking for to give advice prior to taxable events, making sure that all this happens. So they are coordinating the tax advice with the comprehensive overarching financial strategy, making sure that everything's well aligned with the overarching strategy and ensuring that the other subject matter experts are coordinating with this tax subject matter expert. So it's the oversight subject matter expert in the area of tax that's making sure the other subject matter experts are talking to this tax implementation person. It's the oversight professional that makes sure everybody is talking. And that clearly is not happening in the average client's financial life. There is nobody whose job it is to make sure that communication is happening. So let's talk about money management. A money management subject matter expert on the implementation side is someone who manages the investments, usually in a particular account. So the client's got all these accounts, and a money manager is going to manage the investments, usually in a particular account or a few accounts. And they're going to select the investments. They're going to place the trades. They're going to monitor the investments. In other words, make all the buy, sell, and hold decisions. And they are compensated for those duties. These are separate, sometimes separate, sometimes included. But, you know, I'm talking about the money management implementation person is compensated. That individual's compensated for their implementation duties. So then what does the money management oversight person do? Well, they provide oversight. They oversee all the accounts, not just one or two. They're going to judge the decisions that are made by the implementation money managers to see that they're suitable and that they are appropriate for this client and that this is the strategy that it should be that's appropriate for this client. And they're going to judge whether the implementation money managers are doing their job. And it's the oversight money manager who's going to recommend replacements. So if there's style drift in a certain investment or if portfolio management changes at the implementation level, it's really this oversight money manager who's going to decide whether we stick with the current investment and the new money manager or the new investment style or whether we make a change. So coordinating money management recommendations and advice to be in alignment with the overarching financial strategy is a job for the money management oversight person, and to make sure all the other subject matter experts are talking to this implementation subject matter expert. So again, in the area of money management, making sure that everyone's talking to each other when it comes to relevant discussions regarding money management so that they are well coordinated. Estate planning. Estate planning implementation individual creates the actual wills and trusts, creates updates for all the other estate plan, creates and updates, you know, things like powers of attorney and medical powers and living wills and things like that. And they're compensated for doing that, only for that. Then your oversight person on your team provides oversight and reviews all of that. They thoroughly review the wills and trusts and every aspect of the estate plan. They judge if the estate planning documents are well aligned with the client's wishes, and they judge whether the estate planning lawyer is doing a good job or not, and can recommend a replacement lawyer if on the implementation side if that becomes necessary. Like all of these oversight people, the estate planning oversight subject matter expert's job is to make sure that everything that the estate planning implementation subject matter expert is doing is in alignment with the overarching strategy, and to make sure that the estate planning implementation subject matter expert is coordinating with the other implementation subject matter experts to make sure that they're collaborating. And your estate planning oversight person is compensated for that oversight role. Insurance, and this is the last, insurance agents are selling the insurance products that are needed by this client. They acquire the services. They acquire and service the insurance policies. Often paid by commissions, not always, but nevertheless, however they're compensated for the actual implementation of the insurance recommendations. Okay, a separate job is the insurance oversight person, who thoroughly reviews all the insurance policies, judges these policies and all insurance that's available, and makes sure whether it's needed by this client, how much is needed by this client, and just reviews and oversees the whole thing. Their job is to judge whether the insurance agents are doing a good job, and if not, recommend a replacement insurance agent. And as always, their job is to make sure that the insurance recommendations are in alignment with the overarching strategy for this client, and to make sure that all the subject matter experts are coordinating with this insurance subject matter expert to make sure that the collaboration is occurring. So I want to talk, and we are past the 45-minute point, but I've got one more question, so just bear with me here. I knew we would go long today, so... It's just these were great questions, and I wanted to cover enough to where you've got it firmly in your mind. So let's talk about all of this oversight. How does this fit into what we were describing earlier? Our goal is to build a financial services monopoly in our community so that we are radically differentiated from any other financial advisor in town, and so much so that clients don't even think of us as a traditional financial advisor. How does that happen? Because that is what we're doing here. We're trying to build something so different that none of your clients would ever say, you know, that there's anybody else in town doing this. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. They're going to tell everyone they know and everyone they love and care about that you are a different animal, that you are doing things that never were being done before in the client's financial life. So here's what it looks like. This is the model. So the traditional financial advisor, I'm going to create a spectrum here where at the top, there are no conflicts of interest. And along the spectrum, towards the further you go down towards the bottom, you're going to have conflicts of interest. Well, the traditional financial advisor, without getting into any kind of a discussion or argument about this, let's just all acknowledge there are conflicts of interest that are built in for the traditional financial advisor that would be working with your client, whatever they are. If it's product commissions, that's the conflict potentially, because you can make more on one product. You know, the data is very clear on this, that even though a professional is very honorable and very good at what they do, the data is so clear on this that if there is a difference in compensation between one option versus another, that the conflict of interest is there and it does affect behavior. So let's just acknowledge if it's assets under management, then the potential conflict is not as easy to think about. But if you take, for example, a client that has a large asset that's not a financial asset, like stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and if they come to the advisor and say, what should I do with this asset? If the advisor, traditional financial advisor, is compensated as a percentage of assets under management, they only get paid typically on those assets, oddball assets, or let's say client-owned business, real estate, commercial real estate, and you know, investment real estate. Typically, the traditional financial advisor is not compensated on those assets unless the client sells them and puts them into the assets under management. They're billed. So there are conflicts of interest built in. What we think of as on a less conflict of interest is a subject matter expert, like an accountant. So they have less conflict of interest perceived that way. When you study how they operate, that's usually true. But the other axis as we move this way in our model is more comprehensive. So a subject matter expert is a single service typically, like a tax accountant or something like that. Even a financial advisor is, like I said, they're either asset-based or they might do a little financial planning. But there is a model as you move to the left that's more comprehensive. And this would be, for example, a fee-only planner. So up at the top, it's less conflict of interest. And it's moving towards the left. It's a little more comprehensive. A fee-based planner, there might be some conflicts of interest in there because of the way that the compensation is structured. Then let's bring in this element of oversight. So on the left, you have full oversight, and on the right, you have no oversight whatsoever. So it's that we'll do the work, like a subject matter expert, a tax accountant, or maybe a fee-only financial planner. They'll create a financial plan, or they'll do the work of implementation, but who reviews their work? That's what's typically missing. So it's a three-dimensional dilemma. And I will bring into this the family office, although I don't want to get too deep into this. There is less conflict and full oversight, but it's not fully comprehensive. So, you know, family offices might take care of tax returns and money management. They might even take estate planning. But how about sitting down with the individual family, the individual couple? Let's say there's a big family office with a bunch of couples in the family. And so sitting down and actually trying to discern what they're trying to achieve in terms of financial planning to accomplish their objectives, it's more comprehensive than average, but not fully comprehensive typically. And many family offices, it's kind of cafeteria style, so they pick and choose what services they're going to use in the family office, and it's not designed to be full-on comprehensive. It's kind of a cafeteria approach. The other thing about a family office, even if it were fully comprehensive, which let's say that it is, it could have conflicts of interest. So yes, it has full oversight. Yes, let's say some of them are truly comprehensive financial services, but what's the conflict? Well, the conflict potentially with a family office is that it's the individual who creates the family office. It's granddad or whoever created the dynasty, and their creation of this family office, the allegiance is not to the individual couple who's trying to accomplish financial objectives in their life. The primary allegiance is to whoever set up the family office, or the allegiance is to quote unquote the family, if the family dynasty creator has passed away. So the question of whose allegiance. So what we're talking about here is what you're doing. We call you the Knights Templar. You're the most trusted advisor. You're in a conflict-free environment with full oversight, delivering truly comprehensive financial services. This is something that clients are not familiar with. It takes a little while to get their mind around. They don't think somebody like this exists. If they knew you had existed, they would have wanted to work with you 20 years ago. But this is what creates the monopoly. This is what makes you far different. So the question is, can one of your subject matter experts provide both oversight and implementation? So let's look at that, and then we'll move on to the last question. So here's a hypothetical. I would say it is possible, but there are potential conflicts here. So if you say, can one of my subject matter experts, for example, do the tax return and review the tax return? In other words, provide both functions, oversight and implementation. Well, let's just take a hypothetical. Let's say there's a very well-respected tax firm in your town. Let's call them Ernst and Old LLC, a tax firm in your community. And let's say that we've got Alice, the accountant, and Bob, the bookkeeper, who are creating the tax return for your ideal client. Okay, respected firm. You've got a team creating the tax return. But let's say on your team, Sam, which is your subject matter expert, is a partner at that same firm. And Sam's job is to review the tax return, in other words, provide oversight, review the tax return after it's created. So in this hypothetical, and the same could be in a law firm creating estate plan, you have one lawyer and creating the wills and trusts, and then another more senior lawyer, maybe a partner at the firm who's reviewing all of this and providing oversight. I would say, my experience, that it's really up to them to convince you. It's up to that Sam, your subject matter expert, to convince you that their oversight function has not been compromised in any way, and that they are actually providing arm's length oversight. If you're convinced of that, then you could approve this. But since there is a potential for conflict, in other words, it is one firm doing this, this makes it a disclosure issue, and therefore you must explain this to your client. This is, in Advisor Pact, the transparency piece. So this is your commitment. You will make sure that the client's aware of this if you approve it. And, you know, you might have as an option, what do you do? Well, anyway, let's just say that this is a possibility. So that's oversight versus implementation. Final question of the day. How do I describe... we went through that. Okay, so basically the final question is, can you go through the three-meeting process for me briefly? So this is well described in the Kate Wilson case study, so I decided to include this even though I knew it would make us long. Let's just run through it, and I will refer you back to the Kate Wilson case study if you need more than this, because I'm going to fly through this. There are actually six meetings in the three-meeting process. I know it sounds confusing, but the way it works is this. So you've got three meetings that are one-time meetings, which occur only once in a client relationship. You have the initial client interview, whatever that process is, where you bring in a new potential client and you determine whether it's a good fit to work with them or not. Then after that, and we recommend don't let more than 14 days elapse, you then, if you invite a potential ideal client to become a part of your ideal client community and they accept, then 14 days later, we recommend you have the implementation meeting. This is where you begin implementing your client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Sign all the forms, start writing checks, whatever it takes to begin implementing, and that happens very quickly after the initial meeting. While the client's enthusiasm is high and their motivation to get you any missing documents is quite high. So that's why we recommend within 2 weeks. Then 45 days later, you have an initial progress update meeting. And this really, that's 59 days. That allows your clients, your internal subject matter experts 90 days to get the first pass on a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy into place. So that's 60 days. It's 59 days. Then these are the three meetings that are routinely referred to as the three meeting process. They occur every 4 months for the rest of the life of your relationship with this client. So The first meeting is called the Comprehensive Safety Review. That is, and the first one after the initial progress update is called the Initial Comprehensive Safety Review. So this is the first time you do it. It's called the Initial Client Comprehensive Safety Review. It occurs 45 days after the initial progress update. So just to pause for a moment to think about that. Now we're 104 days into the client relationship. So you had an initial client interview. 14 days later, you had the implementation meeting. 45 days after that, you had the initial progress update. 45 days after that, you have the initial comprehensive safety review meeting. So this gives your team, your team of subject matter experts, 104 days, in other words, over a quarter of a year, to get the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy solidly into place and approved and finalized, and everybody signs off on your team. Everybody's in agreement that this plan is, the efficacy of this plan is solid. Okay, so then you have the first, the initial comprehensive safety review. That's where you address safety. So what I want you to think about these three meetings as three simple, three compelling conversations, three simple, compelling conversations that you're going to rotate through, have each year with each ideal client, and just kind of looking at them one at a time. Comprehensive safety review is a conversation about how this client can increase the safety of their plan. As a component of that, behind the scenes, preparing for this meeting, your team is going to have a full insurance review. You're going to review all the key progress reports with the client, and you're going to go through the GPS, which is the greatest probability strategy. It's one of the five critical reports. And this lists all the recommendations from everyone on your team that are necessary for this client to implement what they're trying to accomplish. So you're going to review all those recommendations from everyone on your team on that single document each year. Then 4 months later, you have the Goal Progress Outlook meeting. Basically, the Goal Progress Outlook meeting is a conversation about reviewing the strategies and tactics that your team, primarily your financial planner, is projecting or necessary or going to be necessary to accomplish each goal. So you talk about what's it going to take to fund this goal. You review that, and the goal blueprint is a one pager that your financial planner creates in consultation with and collaboration with everybody else on your team, the other subject matter experts. But in essence, it describes two phases of every goal, the funding or the accumulation phase, where the client's saving up for the goal and accumulating assets towards the goal. And then at this meeting, you describe the funding for each goal. So you show here's where the money's going to come from this account or from this income source. It's very plain and simple, one pager that helps the client understand, the strategies and tactics. You know, it makes each goal real. So it's a one pager called the Goal Blueprint, describing each individual goal that this client has set. Then the annual review, the third meeting in the three meeting process. This is where you, in essence, the conversation is about making course corrections. You do discuss other things in the financial plan, like the cash reserves, or if the client has any debt, you're going to go through that strategy at this meeting. In, you know, any recommendations regarding those two things. But in essence, this is the meeting where obviously every meeting is a meeting where you pay attention and you spot course corrections and you make those recommendations at every single meeting. This is the big picture. This is really focused on what could this client do to accelerate their results. And you examine what course corrections can and should be made for this client to speed up the accomplishment of their objectives that they've shared with you. So that's the three-meeting process. It creates a stable platform for your team to establish processes for them to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. It splits up the work and is the optimal structure for delivering on the promise of truly comprehensive financial services. And so, just kind of wrapping this up, you know, thinking about the benefits of going to the trouble of setting up the three-meeting process, I would say, and this is a tough judgment call to say this, but I would say the three-meeting process is the most important single process to your success. It creates the foundation for everything that you do. It is kind of the operating system for the delivery of truly comprehensive financial services. These meetings are booked 12 months in advance. So the minute you acquire an ideal client, they should have, you know, five additional, after the initial client interview, they should have five meetings put on the calendar right away, like within the next 14 days. So this addresses one of the biggest complaints that clients have about advisors. They don't know when they're going to be meeting with their advisor. Well, in the three meeting process, we book these meetings a year in advance. So you're meeting with every ideal client once every 4 months. And just some internal aspects of this to be aware of, no month has any other meetings or any more meetings than any other month. So it spreads the work out throughout the year for your team. It creates sanity out of delivering on truly comprehensive financial services because it's spread out. In addition to that, no month has any more meeting types than any other month. So you don't have, for example, annual reviews all falling in February, March, April, and May or something. No, you rotate them throughout the year, so no month has any more meeting types than any other month. So there's an effort internally by your administrative manager to spread these meeting types out, and that then reduces the burden on any individual subject matter expert so that their work is spread out throughout the year. So it is important. It's the most, it's the single most important process to the success of what you're doing. And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that there's an aspect to this that is really important, and it is the dry run prep meeting. So 10 days prior to every one of these client progress meetings, with the exception of the implementation meeting where, you know, it's just 14 days after the initial client interview. So a dry run prep meeting is optional for that meeting. And most advisors do not have a dry run prep meeting for the implementation meeting. But for the other four meetings, the initial progress update and the three meetings in the routine three meeting process, 10 days prior to the meeting, your team meets, think of it as a dress rehearsal, to conduct this dry run prep meeting. And this is one of the most important elements of the three meeting process, consistently having and holding the dry run prep meeting. And when I'm brought in to consult with a firm, you know, that the advisor is feeling our team could be delivering at a higher level, the first thing I ask for is the recording from the dry run prep meeting, because I'm looking for the subject matter experts to make sure they're contributing at every meeting and that they're prioritizing the client recommendations and, you know, that the team is functioning as a team. And it's this dry run prep meeting where if there are dysfunctions there, every success that you achieve is because you've sorted out and improved upon the dry run prep meeting. It's that dry run prep meeting that is the key to the three meeting process, and then the three meeting process is the single most important single process to your success. So with that, that's it for this month. Those were the three questions I chose for us to deal with today. We went long. I apologize for that. It's 9 minutes past the hour, so we're 55 minutes instead of 45. We're an hour and 10 minutes instead of 45 minutes, and I apologize for that. But we covered a lot. And until next month, this is Mark Little. We wish you all the best in implementing.